Rabble.ca shares with you the news of the day through a progressive lens. If you're curious about what's happening in Canadian politics, labor, the environment, and beyond, you've come to the right place. This is News for the Rest of Us. Thanks for tuning in. This week on Rabble Radio, Rabble editor Nick Seabrook sits down with Martha Haradaway, newly elected president of the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation, or OSSTF. As the head of one of the largest education unions in Canada, Haradaway steps into leadership at a pivotal moment for Ontario's public education system. The two discuss Haradaway's vision and goals for the Federation and the urgent challenges facing students and education workers under Ontario Premier Doug Ford's government. From overcrowded classrooms to disappearing supports and the growing pressure on frontline staff, what has Ford's education agenda really meant for Ontario? Here is that conversation. Take a listen.
All right, I'm here today speaking with Martha Haradaway, president of the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation. Martha, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Nick.
Could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and a little bit about the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation?
Absolutely. Well, my name is Martha Haradaway. I'm an education worker. I'm from the Windsor Essex area. So I work for the Greater Essex County District School Board. I have a background as a developmental service worker. So that job entails working with special needs students, developing programs, and assisting the classroom teacher.
Fantastic. And let's talk about the union, OSSTF, for a little bit. What are some priorities for OSSTF as students get ready to go back to the classroom in September?
The Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation represents 60,000 teachers and education workers across the province working in kindergarten all the way through university. We represent support staff in six Ontario universities. And next week, we are going back to our leadership conference, and we are going to be talking about, you know, the things that we can do together as a union, as a collective group of workers to be able to put pressure on this government to invest in publicly funded education. When I hear from members directly, it is their working conditions that are at the top of their minds. We have seen an underfunding of publicly funded education here in Ontario over the last 7 years. And it is having a real impact on the working conditions, but more importantly, the learning conditions of our students. And so we're going to talk about all of the things that we need to do to work together, to stand in solidarity with one another, and really to understand the interconnectedness of each of our struggles in OSSTF. We have so many different job classes that we represent: custodians, educational assistants, child and youth workers, of course, high school teachers in every high school across Ontario. We have people that work in our transportation consortiums. And, you know, although they do different work, all of it is designed to support students in their classroom and to provide quality publicly funded education here in Ontario. And what I'm hearing across the board is that there is not one job class that isn't being impacted by these cuts that have happened in Ontario. And it's, like I said, it's having a real impact on members' working conditions as well as students' learning conditions.
Now, you mentioned cuts there. Can you go a little bit more in detail about that? What did the Doug Ford government cut, and what are we seeing scaled back in terms of funding?
The funding for public education in Ontario is per student. So every bum in a seat, so to speak, generates funding from the province, and that funding has not kept up with inflation. So while we are seeing increased costs of hydro, transportation, gas, school boards have not been receiving the funding necessary to be able to keep up with that inflation, and they're having to look at things across the board to be able to balance their budgets. That is a requirement here in Ontario, that school boards are required to balance their budgets. And the last statistic that I heard was that more than 40% of school boards here in Ontario are dealing with deficit budgets. And that's just not a sustainable model. We need this government to understand that while we are dealing with a trade war here in Ontario, that it's investments in our public infrastructure that's what's going to help build a strong economy. When you have a well-educated workforce, a strong publicly funded education system, a strong post-secondary education system, that's what attracts businesses to Ontario, is attractive in terms of wanting to invest in Ontario. Same is true as our public healthcare system. That is what attracts people to want to invest in Ontario. And when our publicly funded infrastructure is crumbling, that isn't as attractive to investments that we need during this time to push back against Trump and obviously the tariffs that he has in place.
Absolutely. I'm glad that you mentioned keeping up with rate of inflation, because this is something that you would often hear. I would often hear as a reporter from whether it's the current education minister, Paul Calandra, or his predecessor, Stephen Lecce, that they would claim, well, that they are spending more on education year over year, but that it's but the point is that it's not actually keeping up with the expenses that the school board's facing, which is leading to difficult decisions. And, we're seeing the impact in the classrooms. And that was the next thing I would like to ask you about, is class sizes. We hear often that class sizes are growing, they're increasing. Is this a concern and an issue for your members?
Absolutely. For our teaching members, it is definitely the number one concern that we're hearing from teachers in our union, is that when the Ontario government introduced de-streaming for grade 9 and 10, they did not provide the appropriate resources and supports for the classroom teacher to be able to deliver the curriculum effectively. OSSTF supports de-streaming. We believe that racialized and Black students were being disproportionately streamed into pathways that weren't appropriate for them. So we absolutely believe that something needed to be done. But when the government implemented the consolidation of the academic math class and the applied math class, they didn't provide the necessary funding to go along with that. So what we are now seeing is larger class sizes, students with different learning needs, and the classroom teacher is not able to provide that individualized attention to each and every student that they deserve to be able to understand the curriculum appropriately. And teachers and education workers here in Ontario, I will say, largely get into the profession because they care about kids. And where they're not able to provide the necessary supports for students, it impacts them personally, because they want to be able to, support students, to watch them grow, to watch them succeed. I don't believe anybody that works in education got into the profession because they wanted to get involved in politics. Politics has found us because we're now fighting for things that we'd never had to fight for 10 years ago. We're fighting for an ability to work in a classroom that is not at the temperature of a sauna. We're fighting for more supports for our special needs students. Classroom teachers go into the school year each and every year now having to provide classroom supplies, pencils, pens, erasers. It doesn't have to be this way. The Ontario taxpayer is paying for a public education system and a public health care system, and they're giving their hard-earned dollars to the government, and they are expecting that the government is going to use their money to provide those services. So I would say that the Ontario taxpayer is not getting what they're paying for, and it's directly impacting our students.
And just something that you mentioned there about the heat. Obviously, September, it's getting warmer every year in September. June, of course, it's very hot these days by the time June rolls around. So what is it like in these classrooms? I think some of our listeners might be surprised that many classrooms don't have temperature control. And with how large classrooms are getting, you're getting dozens of students in one room without air conditioning, without proper ventilation, and it affects students' health. So what are you calling for to solve the issue of heat in classrooms in warmer rep?
OSSTF, along with the Ontario Federation of Labour, we are advocating for heat stress regulations across the board in workplaces across Ontario. And from an education perspective, our classrooms are, like I said earlier, they're sweltering saunas, and it is not good for our students' learning. It's not good for their health. I can't imagine having to sit outside with the heat waves that we've been having, or inside, without proper ventilation, without proper access to cooling stations, without proper access to, water stations. It seems, such a simplistic ask. But again, the government is not funding the school boards at an appropriate level to be able to provide for those things in our classrooms when the heating is at a situation that is unsustainable. And so what we're asking the Ontario government for, from our perspective, is an education sector regulation in the Occupational Health and Safety Act. Believe it or not, in 2025, if you work in a school, you fall under the industrial regulations in the Occupational Health and Safety Act. So the same regulations that apply as if you were working in a factory apply to workers in a school. And it just doesn't make sense. There's no correlation between the two. If you're working in education, it's definitely different than an industrial standard. And so we've been advocating for quite some time that we need a specific regulation that not only deals with maximum temperatures in schools, but also some regulations to be able to deal with the increased workplace violence that our members are telling us that has been exploding year over year. I just did an interview with the Globe and Mail yesterday, and there is an article that's been produced today, and they had done a Freedom of Information request around the reported incidents of workplace violence. And not surprising, the data is showing and reflects what we've been hearing from our members for years, is that workplace violence is increased to a level that is unsustainable as well. And that is, there is a direct correlation between the funding, the reduced number of preventative support staff positions, and the increased violence. So it all does come back to the funding. And again, it doesn't have to be this way. We can work together with parents, community, government to solve these issues. We need a willing partner to come to the table and start to discuss these things and find real solutions, not only for our members, but for our students as well.
Now, just diving a little bit deeper into that issue of workplace violence, can you tell me a little bit more about where you're seeing these instances? Are they mostly in high schools? Are they mostly in elementary schools? And you mentioned that it's down to a lack of funding. So what sort of gaps are the lack of funding creating that's leading to higher instances of violence?
It takes a team to educate a student. What's that saying? It takes a village to raise a child, and that's true in our schools. We have seen over the last number of years, as school boards are dealing with funding reductions and having to make difficult choices, is that it is those preventative support staff that are working in our schools that are first to be cut from Ontario budget. Our child and youth workers, our educational assistants, our social workers, our psychologists, everybody that is there to be able to provide the wraparound supports for students to be able to succeed, those services are not where they were 10 years ago, 5 years ago, last year. We're seeing more and more cuts across the board for September as well. And I believe that there is a direct correlation in the increased violence that we're experiencing in schools because of the lack of preventative supports that, our students so desperately need.
The premier, Doug Ford, took a controversial step earlier this year where he directed his education minister, Paul Calandra, to essentially take over several school boards, remove control from the trustees and put it directly into the hands of the Ministry of Education. I was just wondering, what was OSSTF's reaction to this move by the government to more directly control school boards? It's not all school boards, but it is significant number of them. And why do you think this was done, and how is this affecting your work as an education worker?
The last day of school announcement to take over four school boards, two of the largest in the province, in Ottawa and Toronto, on the public side, is unprecedented. It has not been something that we have seen to this extent in quite some time. I think the last big provincial takeover for a school board was back in 2012, when the TDSB was taken over at that time. It is concerning for the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation. The last time that a minister or supervisor came in and had financial oversight to the extent of what is they're looking at now, in 2012, the then supervisor cut $90 million from the TDSB. And that largely came at the expense of, again, social workers, psychologists, child and youth workers, and all of those other wraparound supports. So while we haven't seen that yet, it does raise concerns for us, because we know that the school boards are already underfunded. There is no more fat to trim, so to speak. So it would be interesting to see how the supervisor intends to balance budgets without directly impacting classrooms and the learning conditions. Minister Calandra likes to, repeat his talking points in that, the supports and resources need to be in front of students in the classroom. So I'm going to hold him to that. And we're going to hold him to that, because all of those supports in the classroom include the other wraparound supports to make sure our children are successful.
Now, part of this announcement of takeover of some of these school boards is related to a topic we talked about just earlier, violence in schools. Minister Calandra said that he was interested in introducing police officers into schools. I was just wondering, what was the OSSTF's thought on that? Is this making schools safer, or is this introducing kids to a police system, when they're not psychologically prepared for it?
We have policies on our books that say that our schools need to be police-free schools. Again, this is not the number one solution to the issues that we are dealing with. When I talk about the preventative supports that are so desperately needed, the child and youth workers, social workers, that is where we should be putting the investments in to education. I have seen successful community programs where there is a police officer that is assigned to the school. But where they are successful is when they are working alongside a social worker, a child and youth worker, and presenting all of those preventative strategies. So while the minister likes, I will say, use this as a distraction from the real issues, the real issue right now is the underfunding of our public education system. This is not a one-size-fits-all solution for every school board across Ontario. And so I really think that as school boards are going to be required to have a police officer assigned in their communities, if the police service offers that, it has to be done at the local level. There has to be local decision-making, and the top-down approach in which they are approaching this certainly isn't the solution, and a one-size-fits-all approach is never the solution, and it takes the involvement of the community, parents, education workers, and teachers to be able to make those decisions collectively.
Well said. And just shifting the interview now towards yourself, because you were recently elected the new president of OSSTF, and it's a historic victory because you're also the first education support worker to be president of OSSTF. Can you tell us a little bit about what your goals are as president and how your background brings a unique perspective to the role?
I am honored. It is the honor of a lifetime to be serving in the capacity as president, and certainly as the first education worker president of the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation. Like I said, our union represents 60,000 members from across a variety of job classes. And so I think I am uniquely positioned because I have had the opportunity to work with most education workers, understanding what it means to live paycheck to paycheck, to work 2 to 3 jobs to make ends meet. I bring that perspective to the role. And I'm really excited for where we're going to go as a federation. My goal over the next year, our collective agreements expire in August 31st, 2026. My job is to make sure that we are in the strongest position possible when our collective agreements expire, to make sure that our union really does meet the needs of our members in terms of improving their working conditions and their compensation while improving the publicly funded education system. So it's important for me, again, that we understand the interconnectedness of each of our struggles. And I'm really excited over the next year, the approaches that we're going to take to build solidarity, not only in OSSTF, but across the education sector as a whole, along with the other teaching affiliates, along with the other education worker unions, and really being prepared to mobilize to, again, improve the working conditions for our members.
All right. And we at Rabble are very passionate about our union coverage and will be eager to continue to follow OSSTF's campaign to ensure that students in Ontario are getting the best possible education.
Thank you so much. I really look forward to working with you.
All right. Have a great rest of your day. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Rabble editor Nick Seabrook and Martha Haradaway, president of OSSTF, in conversation. Thanks so much for that, Nick and Martha. Switching gears now, this is our In Case You Missed It segment, where we review the top stories from this week on Rabble.ca. Let's dive right in. In Canadian politics, Alberta politics reporter David Kleimenhage notes that Pierre Poilievre's by-election win in Battle River Crowfoot came as no surprise. After incumbent MP Damien Couric stepped aside, the outcome was all but guaranteed, with Poilievre securing 80% of the vote in one of the country's most reliably conservative ridings. While the by-election solidifies Poilievre's return to parliament, it also places him in a region where some political voices are notably critical of federal institutions. But whether this safe seat return will help him nationally, that's still up for debate. In labor news, Air Canada flight attendants, represented by QP, are now voting on a tentative agreement following a dramatic, high-profile strike that defied a federal back-to-work order. The strike began August 16, on the same day Air Canada initiated a lockout, and marked a turning point in resistance to the government's repeated use of Section 107 of the Canada Labor Code to force workers back on the job. In a powerful moment of protest, QP President Mark Hancock ripped up the CIRB order in front of a cheering crowd, declaring the strike would only end with a fair deal. Workers were fighting against unpaid labor, specifically the airline industry's block time system that only pays from takeoff to landing, ignoring work done during boarding, safety checks, and deplaning. This is the eighth time the federal government has invoked Section 107 since June 2024, drawing sharp criticism from the Canadian Labour Congress, which applauded QP's defiance as a defense of the constitutional right to free and fair collective bargaining. Also in labour news, a powerful new report from the Migrant Rights Network warns that proposed federal reforms to the temporary foreign worker program could worsen exploitation rather than fix it. Drawing on the voices of 514 migrant farm workers, the report says Ottawa's plan will raise housing deductions while doing little to improve actual living conditions. Workers could be forced to pay up to 30% of their wages, over $15,000 a year, for overcrowded, unsafe housing, the report states. One worker described sleeping 8 to a room, with no locks and hotter than an oven conditions. Federal guidelines promising adequate and reasonable housing are too vague to enforce, critics say. The Migrant Rights Network points to deeper issues. Canada's temporary foreign worker system has been described by the UN as a breeding ground for modern slavery. Instead of offering permanent residency upon arrival, which would give workers power to leave abusive jobs, Ottawa's proposed changes double down on employer control. As always, you can read the full version of all of these stories and more on rabble.ca. And finally, are you interested in producing journalism for positive change? Rabble.ca and the Institute for Change Leaders are searching for this winter's Jack Layton Journalism for Change Fellow. Jack Layton inspired people by example, proving that working together for social justice is possible and achievable. This fellowship supports emerging journalists who are engaged in social justice reporting. Over the period of 4 months, the fellow will develop a feature story with our editor and will work on brief news pieces each week. To learn more about this fantastic opportunity, visit rabble.ca/journalismforchange. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
You are now tuned into CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. Want to know more about the channel? Find us online at cjsf.ca.